Maybe we can talk for just a couple of minutes to make sure that the thing is working. The great fear that I have is somehow I'm going to miss 2 hours.
I could give you a 3 to 4 minute resume in early history if you wanted to start with. I don't know what format you like.
Okay, let me just introduce it, then, so I'll know what the tape is. This is Leon Gorler interviewing Professor Donald Cram in his office at UCLA on January 14th, 1980.
'81,
you're right. I know you were born in Chester, Vermont in 1919, but beyond that, I know very little about your early history. And perhaps you could start there.
I was born of Canadian parents, my mother having been first generation immigrant to Germany, from Germany to Canada, and my father's family having been of Scottish background and having been in Canada for some years. My sisters are Canadian. I have four of them. I have no brothers, and I was the fourth of five.
Okay.
I was the next to the youngest. And my father died when I was not quite 4 years old and left my mother with children and no means of support. And so I was raised with a great deal of challenge in a financial sense and a hard-working sense, and, but I was fortunate enough to have had quite a decent father on the one hand, and a very energetic and provident mother, very enterprising mother, and she, although had essentially no education. My father had been a lawyer. My mother had hardly been educated. In fact, she was raised as a Mennonite and had obtained an instant set of values by going completely against the religion in which she had been raised, which is a sort of a bleak religion, and embraced all the things they were against. And raised us in a most liberal way, and we were raised with all the advantages that a much more wealthy family might have had from the point of view of music lessons and sports and plays and some of the things that tend to embellish life. We were also raised to be hardworking and ambitious, and also the raised to the general notion that education is the path to righteousness. I suspect this is why I'm a college professor currently. Brattleboro was a good place too, Brattleboro, Vermont. It was a town of 10,000 and a lot of work for youngsters, a lot of different jobs, odd jobs after school, partially self-supporting at a very early age. I worked for probably 10 or 15, 20 different employers at one time or another, doing just about everything you can imagine. Left Brattleboro when the home broke up because my older sisters were all going to school. Went to Florida beginning of my third year in high school to work for friends of the family in a store. Worked there for a year, went to school in Lake Worth and West Palm Beach, Florida, and then for the fourth year moved up to a private school on Long Island where I worked to support myself, worked as a janitor.
And what school was that?
And that was a school that's no longer in existence, it's Wynwood School. But it was a small private school and pretty good. Took Regents exams, did quite well on them, without being really very much instructed, except I learned early a lot of self-discipline, and I instructed myself pretty much. I remember I took a course in solid geometry where the teacher didn't know anything about it, and all I did was to work all the problems in the book. That's an example.
Yeah.
To that type of thing. I think I got a 94 on the Regents exam out of 100, so that wasn't too bad.
All on your own.
With no competition and no instruction. I never did very well in my grades in school, but did reasonably well. But I engaged in sports somewhat successfully and was looked upon as being well-rounded. Did some singing, and some dramatics, on the basis of probably more the well-roundedness than anything else. I got a $6,000 scholarship to Rollins College in Florida in 1937, and spent 4 years down there and got a bachelor's degree. This is a liberal arts college at that time with about 450 students, co-ed.
And who provided that money? There was a
they had four of them, I think, and they had some rich donor that donated these as sort of a trial run.
Well, this was from Rollins.
This is from Rollins.
Your little resume said a national honorary scholarship.
And it was taken. It was a national competition. And there were applications to be filled out and interviews to be given and presentations to be made. And I went to Rollins and had a very good time. And it wasn't it isn't a first class school, but it's a school where you could get a first class education if you wanted to dig in. I worked not very hard, but reasonably hard, particularly my second 2 years. I remember particularly that they had a two-person chemistry department, and I took four courses in chemistry. That's all I had. But I found later that those courses were held up very well. I had missed some things, but what I had was great.
Who were the people there?
Guy Waddington was. He was a Caltech, a PhD.
And but Waddington or?
Waddington, okay. Guy Waddington. And after leaving Rollins, which he did, this was during the Depression, recall, he went to the Bureau of Mines in Bartlesville, Oklahoma. And I think he became head of it for a while. And then he worked for the National Academy of Sciences for a while. So he was good. And Gene Farley, who got his PhD at the University of Illinois, taught me organic chemistry, and then he became a patent lawyer and works as a patent lawyer in Eugene, Oregon, the last I knew. And he was high class, too. He's a first class person. We used Conant's book, which at that time was, I guess, standard, but you could put it in a corner of a current textbook. It really was not all that great, looking back on it, as a book, in my view. Having written a book, I
yes, I know what you mean. Let's go back for just a couple of minutes to.
Yeah.
Can you give me your parents' names?
William Moffat Cram was my father's name, and Joanna Shelley Cram, and I. I think it was Shelley.
Okay.
That was, I guess, her maiden name. It may have been modified in transit from Germany. I don't know.
Okay.
It happens.
When you were growing up in Brattleboro, were there any, aside from the obvious good habits that your mother instilled in you and the ambition and so on, were there other people that you can think of, any teachers, anyone like that who might have influenced you in any great way?
Only in the sense that I had a Latin teacher who was a strict disciplinarian and who constantly worked at me from the point of view of trying to extract more from me. Mm-hmm. And I remember her because she challenged me. Mm-hmm. And did so very ably. Also, there were some good English teachers, and then I had some mm-hmm. good coaches, and mm-hmm. I played hockey and played football and played tennis.
Mm-hmm.
And I was lucky in the sense that I got interested in athletics, and it's something that I've maintained. And by interest, I don't mean as a spectator.
Yeah.
I mean as a participant.
Yeah.
And so I had a very fine childhood, an ideal place, a fine family.
Yeah. I know Brattleboro. I like it. Spend our summers in Wilmington. When did you decide you were going to go to college?
Well, that had always been understood.
I see.
The means was not understood.
It was just.
But there was no question by some device or another. And all of us did get to college.
Mm-hmm.
Not all of us got through 4 years of it, but all of us got to college. And most of my two of my sisters went all the way through and one didn't.
Mm-hmm.
And another died in the meantime.
At Rollins, were there other, particularly influential people aside from the two chemists who were there?
I took a course in high school in chemistry and knew I was going to be a chemist.
Ah, that's the next
at the end of that course.
I see.
The teacher was not very good,
mm-hmm.
but the book was good. Well, the book was all right, but it simply showed me the subject, and it was a natural complementary relationship between me and the subject.
Mm-hmm.
And after that, I knew I wanted to be a chemist. And I knew I wanted to be a college professor when Guy Waddington told me at the end of my freshman year that I wasn't good enough to be a college professor.
He threw down the gauntlet, as
it
were.
So the fact that he told me I wasn't good enough meant to me that he thought that that was the ultimate. Not having had a father, I was always looking around for father figures, and I never found a perfect one, but I found a piece of one here and a piece of one there, and over a period of time I assembled them, and I took a piece from him, and I've taken a piece from quite a number of different people over the years. And in some ways I was lucky not to have a father, because I got to
the best of lots.
I got a chance to assemble my own.
Yeah.
And that's sort of nice if you can do it. It takes longer and there's a certain amount of trouble associated with it.
Yeah.
At least you aren't stuck with a bum.
When you decided to be a chemist, and after, let's say, a short while at Rollins, what were your perceptions of being a chemist? I mean, you saw these people teaching, I suspect, and maybe.
Well, I had done a whole lot of very repetitive jobs as a child,
mm-hmm.
Frequently on a barter basis, my labor for goods,
mm-hmm.
Whether it be apples or strawberries or God knows what, socks or clothes or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And I knew what I didn't want to do, and what I knew was I didn't want to do anything repetitive. And to me, the word research meant something that was non-repetitive. Now, of course, there's an awful lot of repetitive research I learned later, but on the other hand, the notion of research and the notion of repetition seemed to me to be antithetical. And this is why the notion of doing research, in other words, doing something new every day, appeared to be very attractive. And when I learned that in academia you could do your own research, then this combined, and also that you come and go to some extent on your own initiative, mm-hmm. and also that it really only depended on you, and that you were unlimited by institutions, all of that added up to academic research. And when I learned that I could do chemistry and I had a lot of fun doing it, it was a natural thing that I go into chemistry and go into academic chemistry.
Mm-hmm.
And then as I planned to be a physical chemist until I got to the University of Nebraska, and they had no proper physical chemistry there, so they had some pretty good organics, so I decided to become an organic chemist because I was simply making use of what was there.
Mm-hmm.
And
how did you decide to go to I want to ask you a few more questions about Rollins, but then I also want to ask you how you
let's finish up Rollins, shall we?
Okay, yeah, sure. Laboratories there, were you you obviously had some laboratory courses. How were they?
Pretty poor, even by those standards. Mm-hmm. On the other hand, it was a small school. There might have been two or three people majoring in chemistry. Mm-hmm. What was good about it was that I became sort of a TA my second year and had to build equipment and got to blow glass and mm-hmm. got to design some of the equipment for the physical chem course, which I then took, and they were dependent on students more than you would at a better endowed place. And as a result, I got to shape, again, I took courses out of books and things like that on my own, mm-hmm. and got to be sort of a do-it-yourself operation mm-hmm. in teaching, and this was good because taking a course was between you and the staff, the two people there, and you could more or less design whatever you wanted to do.
Yeah.
So I got a little bit of introduction to the fact that things weren't cut and dried and research, and that you could design stuff and make stuff. And
did you do a little bit of research there as well?
A little bit, but not. It didn't come to anything. Looking back on it, it yeah. was pretty shallow and pretty unsophisticated.
What happened to the other other two students? Did any of the others go on to graduate school?
Oh, yes. Fact is, there's a fellow whose name escapes me that's down in the Scripps Institute working in biological chemistry. And there's another fellow who got his PhD and works for Shell Development. His name was Robin Hood Ray. Robin Hood Ray. R-A-E. The other fellow's name was something like Danlicker. At Scripps. He works at Scripps. Danlicker. And these two people are pretty good competition. In fact, is they got better grades than I did.
That's absolutely amazing. Out of an undergraduate population of three, they all ended up, or thereabouts. That's probably a very good percentage.
Yeah, they got, well, that might have been some kind of chance of some sort.
Yeah.
I learned how to fly down there. I was in dramatics. I sang in the choir for a long time. I started going out for athletics, but then decided I didn't get a big enough yield mm-hmm. on the time, mm-hmm. and that was incompatible with it. For the science education. But I engaged in intramural swimming and diving and football, touch football and tennis and whatnot. And as usual, enjoyed it.
But during that period, you didn't have to work because you had to.
That's right. I had all this money. Yeah,
I see.
That was a hell of a lot of money in those days.
That's right. It was essentially $1,500
a year. I paid for everything. $1,500 paid for tuition and room and board. Mm-hmm. And then in the summer, I worked for the National Biscuit Company mm-hmm. in New York City.
Oh.
The first year as a salesman working the east side, I got a class in ethnics. I worked as a salesman. I got tossed out of a lot of little delicatessens and got to know all A&P managers. And I also saw the seamy side of New York prostitution, drugs, gang warfare.
Yeah.
Things I didn't know had the possibility of existing before that.
It's not from your background, you wouldn't have.
So all of that was very, very yeah. good for me
yeah.
because it told me what part of the world was like.
Yeah.
And also I got a good course in ethnics. Mm-hmm. Got a chance to see the differences between people with different histories and cultures and whatnot.
Yeah.
That was very rewarding. I lost 40 pounds in the process in 3 months.
Oh, my.
But that's all right. Yeah. I was a little overweight going into that.
How did you decide to go up to Nebraska?
Rollins not being the best school in the world, and 1941 not being the most prosperous year in the 20th century, led me to apply to 17 different schools for a teaching assistantship. And I got four offers. University of Pittsburgh, if I remember correctly, University of Nebraska, Iowa State, involved Gilman. And I forget the fourth. There was a fourth, I believe, out of 17 schools. And as a matter of fact, I've lectured lectured at most of these schools in the meantime, and I always congratulate the students on having been admitted there. They're very special.
The good taste at those places.
Not only good taste, but they were good enough to be accepted. So, although I knew I shouldn't get a PhD from the University of Nebraska, I looked upon it as a stepping stone. I knew I had to get a degree from a better place to get an academic job, a good academic
job. You already understood that.
I already understood
that. You were.
And I understood a lot of things earlier than most people, because when you aren't given things, you learn how to get them on your own.
That's right. You really fend it for yourself for a long
exactly.
time.
Exactly. And so I was 4 or 5 years ahead of my time in all sorts of things, like political development. I went through a political development when I was about 14 or 15. My mother used to start reading me things, and then she'd get me interested, and then she'd quit. And I'd have to finish them on my own. And so I ate up everything that came along in the way of reading, and I went through various stages of getting interested in politics, and then interested in cultural anthropology, and interested in history, and interested in English literature. Particularly, I was raised on English literature pretty much, and English literature values, mm-hmm. with a pretty big dose of Victorian ethics thrown in. Mm-hmm. And of course, there, Vermont's a little bit that way. Anyway.
Yeah.
And but then, of course, this business of being uprooted and going away from home early. That was pretty tough. It took me a long time to wash New England out of my hair. It took me 7-8 years to get the roots out. I've got them out. I've never completely put them down anywhere in the meantime.
The comparison always was, I think, between you and Paul Barlow. He came out of the Midwest, and there was no greater New Englander than Paul Barlow, or anyone who appeared that way. And you came out of New England, and it seemed to me that you belonged here on the West Coast.
I took on some of the aspects of the West Coast, but I'm very New England in my in my fundamentals.
Uh-huh.
My values are very New Englandish.
Well, that's good to hear. New England values are good ones. What were the nature of the courses that you took at Nebraska, and what kind of research did you do there?
I was there 9 months. I worked for Norman Cromwell. I got a 10 months, I guess it was. I got I was a TA the whole time, including the summer session, the first summer session. I got a master's degree and wrote a thesis and published 3 papers based on the master's thesis. I did all my own analyses. I did, I think, 45 analyses, carbon, hydrogen, and nitrogen analyses. These were all new compounds. And I worked on with Cromwell, we worked on the neighboring nitrogen and substitution reactions. And we were actually, I think, very close to being the first in discovering the migration of nitrogen from carbon to carbon via imine, or ethylene-imine, mm-hmm. Intermediates, mm-hmm. for alpha-bromo ketones, beta-amino alpha-bromo ketones. And for example, we'd make beta-morpholino alpha-bromo ketones, treat it with piperidine, the morpholine would migrate to the alpha position, the piperidine would come in at the beta position. And at least that's what we'd see in the product, and we interpreted it as going through the bridged imine, the bridging imine. And Norman was right at the beginning of that, and we worked out a couple of systems, and of course that at that time was hot stuff. Mm-hmm. And so I had in some ways a better master's thesis than I did a PhD thesis.
Mm-hmm. But you got a taste of mechanistic organic chemistry at that point.
That's
too,
right. Yeah.
So because, yeah, that's the odd thing, because later on I know that, you know, and working with Feaser, you certainly didn't, but we'll get to that.
Well, right. I became a pretty good lab man. I've been pretty bad at Rollins, getting my hands under control. I broke a lot of stuff, partly because of my impatience. I worked very fast and, and all. And but I got to things under control. Nebraska moved very fast. In fact, moved out in and out of there with a thesis better than most of the PhD theses that were coming out of there at the time. And also I learned that I liked research. And I liked research with my own hands. And as I said, I did my own. You had to in those days.
Okay. Did you have some courses there as well?
Oh, I had a whole bunch of courses.
Yeah.
Oh, yes.
Do you remember any of them in particular and the kinds of textbooks you were using there?
I don't remember textbooks, but I remember a course in heterocycles given by Hamilton. And it was a marching down Fifth Avenue type course. It was an encyclopedic type course where we talked about the various heterocyclic systems, how they're made, what their reactions are. Very classical, but very substantial course. There was a fellow by the name of Deming that wrote a bunch of textbooks, physical chemist, that was one of the world's worst teachers. Just awful. He'd forget what lecture he'd given the day before, so he'd come in he'd start to give the same lecture over again, and the class would tell him he'd given that one yesterday, and then without embarrassment he'd give the next one. He never prepared. He was bad. He's one of the people who turned me into physical chemistry. But
it's funny that Tom Jacobs had that experience at Cornell and became an organic chemist too.
He was known locally as Hog Fat Deming. The students knew him as Hog Fat Deming. He had nobody respected him. He used to entertain the pretty girls in his office. And all this.
Who else was there at Nebraska that you remember?
Well, there was an analytical chemist that taught me how to do these analyses and worry about error analysis, whose name escapes me. I think his name started with a P and it was a French name, but I can't bring it to mind.
Okay.
But what I do remember, he used to leave in the middle of the lecture and say he had to do something that nobody could do for him. He'd reappear 3 or 4 minutes later. What's his name? It isn't Paquette, but it's something a little bit similar to that. Actually, when I was in Nebraska, I did nothing but work. I got up probably in the neighborhood of 100 to 120 hours a week.
Sounds like you must have.
On that kind of schedule. And I moved very well. I'd go to a movie every other week, maybe. That'd be my entertainment. But then Lincoln isn't rich with outdoor life, a lot of neat things to do.
Are we married? In
I got Lincoln? Married while I was there. Mm-hmm. I took a weekend off, got married to somebody that I'd known at Rollins, and had been going around it for quite a number of years.
I see. We were supporting each other on the TA?
Well, yes. As a matter of fact, I got $50 a month. $50 a month for my TA job, but then you have to remember that you could buy a reasonable dinner for a quarter. And a milkshake was a nickel. So steak was 35 cents a pound. So this gives you a framework.
Yes, right.
I paid $8 a month when I first went there for a room that I slept in in a bed with another guy. We shared a room and a bed for $8 a month. So that gives you some impression as to the prices.
Yeah. Did you take an advanced organic course aside from this heterocyclic course?
No course in physical organic chemistry. Whitmore's book I had a look at. I think it had just come out in 39 or something like that, and, or 40, something like this. And I remember the benzylic acid being astonished at how complicatedly that mechanism was written in the book, with all the electrons showing. And of course, you get into a tremendous amount of electron counting. Mm-hmm. And I remember being impressed with its complicatedness. And that's all I recall of the outside of my research. There was some, of course, involved in this immune rearrangement. Mm-hmm. But I didn't really have a good feeling for it.
How about just general papers? Were, aside from your research and your coursework, were you being introduced to the literature at that point? Did you know what was going on outside of...
Very little. Very little. Yeah. I was operationally oriented. How do you get through? I was not scholarly oriented.
Mm-hmm. Okay. No reason why one should be at that age.
Well, people have different inclinations, yeah. And I've always been toward doing things.
So then you went off to Merck. How did that all take place?
I had a... That's an interesting story, too. At least to me. The first time that the government offered a civilian pilot training program, I took it at Rawlins. You got a private flying license under government auspices. They paid the bill. Mm-hmm. And now, that summer, after I...
You know what? Before